Bitcoin is such an incredible tool for empowering people, which then makes us able to have free time to be better human beings.
Welcome, everybody. Frank here, joined today by a special guest, Hannah Rosenberg, a developer advocate at Lightning Labs, who often has, I think, profound and important philosophical things to share on the internet. Also, she shares these things in a way that's oftentimes kind, maybe thoughtful, but kind, and doesn't necessarily often find herself entangled in drama, but at the same time brings up really important points about where we're headed in the Bitcoin space, whether we're headed in the right direction or not necessarily in the right direction, in her opinion. So I was excited to have her on today. I know that usually we're focused on Bitcoin adoption in Africa, Latin America, other places around the world, but I also like to make space for these conversations where I just feel like we have just a real human being who very much appreciates what Bitcoin is and who has some nuanced opinions on where the space is headed. So let me stop there. Hannah, maybe you want to introduce yourself a little bit.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for that. Yeah, I'm Hannah Rosenberg. I have been in the Bitcoin space for a long time now. I fell in love with Bitcoin back in 2012. So I think that gives me some perspective on like how the vibes have shifted over the years in the space. And so I've done lots of different things. I do many different things in the space, currently working on Lightning Labs. But I do want to make it clear that I am here speaking on behalf of myself and not anyone else. These are my personal opinions.
Amazing. I appreciate that, Hannah. So I'm going to dive right in. One of the reasons I shot you a DM on Twitter was I saw a post you had about how we've seen a lot of what you termed authoritarianism and elitism creeping into the world of Bitcoin, and how disappointed you are with this. And that resonated with me, as I think we've seen, I've noticed a lot of this as well. You've mentioned that you've sort of lost respect for maybe some in the Bitcoin space, or maybe the Bitcoin space at large, but that there really are certain characters in this space who really do uphold the ethos of decentralization, of empowering individuals around the globe. And, you know, that you sort of, you seem like you have found your balance with this, but I was hoping you could provide a little bit of color with what you meant by the authoritarianism and elitism. And we don't have to get into like particular people, but generally speaking, what sort of trends you're paying attention to and what you were, what you had in mind when you tweeted this out.
Yeah, totally. Also, I'm glad it appears that I found some sort of balance, because that is not the internal experience at all. It's something that's sort of a continuing thing that I debate and ponder. It's also really, just to back up a little bit, really nice to hear you say, oh, you appreciate that, like I'm sort of measured in how I talk to people online. And that's, and I hit this point of frustration even just like last week, where I'm like, does it matter? Should I just be yelling at everyone? Does it ever matter that I like try so hard to like present in a, like a, you know, what I think is like a, I don't know, a civil or respectable fashion? And I think one thing I remember, I was debating with some friends about this, and they're like, well, I don't know if it ever works to change someone's mind so much, but it does work to kind of pull in people that you want to be around, right? And it's like,
that.
Oh, okay. All right, that makes sense. Maybe I'll refrain from being a complete ass on the internet. I'll carry on. Because it seems so popular.
good way to engagement farm, for sure.
Oh, gosh. Especially on Twitter. I think Twitter is, you know, the rage machine. That is, you know, what it works off of. And it works well. But if we're talking about authoritarianism in Bitcoin, it's like I could do an hour-long monologue on this. You know, it's like, where do we want to start? But like I said, I fell in love with Bitcoin back in 2012. I was living in the countryside in Australia, so not like very involved in physical Bitcoin spaces. There weren't really any at that point anyhow. But then came back to Chicago and organized a meetup in Chicago for years. And, you know, I organize a meetup in San Juan now. So I've seen these things change a lot. And I don't want to give the idea that Bitcoin was, the Bitcoin community, if there is such a thing, was ever a utopia, you know. But it was very anti-authoritarianism. It was very, you know what I mean? That was absolutely like at the core of it back then. And to see this change over the years has been scary and also personally quite difficult, because I think it was around about, and with hindsight, I can see this stuff really started creeping up as early as 2018 is when I started to experience it. But it was mid 2022 when it really hit me hard that like this is really around me a lot. And it wasn't just in the Bitcoin world, definitely in the crypto community here in San Juan, it was like quite intense as well. You know, it's interesting that presented to me largely as misogyny, but I really think that authoritarianism and misogyny are pretty much the same thing. Just one's on a more intimate personal level and one's on a grander societal level. But it's very much this idea of like, I don't have value unless I'm above someone else, whether that be a woman or employees or, you know, the world at large. You know, many different ways to do that one.
Could you define what this authoritarianism looks like? I just want for the listener to sort of have a little bit of an idea of what you're seeing and what you're terming authoritarianism, just as you're talking about it. I think it might be helpful.
Yeah. Okay. So like how I first started to experience that personally was a lot of sort of misogyny in the space. And it's a, you know, that exists everywhere, you know, bits and pieces. I mean, there's, you know, assholes of every variety all over the world, right? But to really like the consistency and repetitiveness of it is what it started to originally is how I experienced it. And now I think I see it as part of the same problem. But I started to then notice a lot of the elitism, right? When I got into Bitcoin, this is very much about we're going to help people. We're going to make things better. We're going to get rid of these giant power structures, right? And then I started to see a lot of the have fun staying poor, right? Which is very much like I remember actually being at a conference one time and talking to someone and trying to like be like, oh, I'm excited about how Bitcoin's going to, it's just like 2018, I think, Bitcoin's going to like help, you know, these different communities or something. It's like, and this guy just like this, you know, there's this crew of like largely American, but not all American sort of Twitter Bitcoin influencers that are just, whew. And I remember this guy, like, we're not on Twitter. Like, he had no reason. This wasn't a show he was putting on. And just started explaining to me, if someone in some third world country is too stupid to have bought Bitcoin, well, then they just deserve to be poor. Like, literally just says this, right? Because we're just walking to the after party, you know what I mean? And it's just like, what? Like, and then, so it's very much this elitist thing. If you are too stupid to have figured it out, then you deserve the poverty that's coming your way. Not realizing that, like, you know, tech has to be usable in order to be adopted. And if we don't make it usable, it won't get adopted. And like, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. But that aside, there's all kinds of other, you know, like the whole Citadel fantasy, you know, is just, I'm going to be the king of my hill and I'm going to watch you all burn, you know? And it's just the antithesis of what drew me to the space. And then on top of that, what was frightening to me is, you know, Bitcoin is not a partisan thing because it's a global thing, right? There's so many different political parties and political movements around the world. And so it's not, I don't think Bitcoin appropriately ties to any particular politician or political party. But what was frightening to me is to see how a lot of American Bitcoiners attach themselves to the Trump administration. And then, you know, and I understand why, because other administrations were crappy with the regulation and that sort of stuff. Like, I totally understood that from a logistical perspective. But then I remember the day Trump won the election and I logged on to Twitter and it was just absolute sea down all down my feed of just people like dunking on others, basically the idea being now it's our turn to rule, right? Not now, we're not okay, this is a good win because now we'll get better regulation, we can improve this tech, which I totally would have been on board with. It was basically the vibe of now it's my turn to put my boot on you, you know? And that was the vibe, and that was terrifying to me. I was like, what has happened here?
Yeah, I think a friend of mine said this to me once. I wish I could take credit for this quote, but people don't want democracy. They just want the dictatorship that they agree with. And it really has struck such a deep chord. It's just been a really depressing reality to witness. But I think also when you go through what gets termed fourth turnings and there's major shifts happening, I think these divides and these chasms between people and political beliefs and ideologies become wider and wider. So ideally, this gap closes at some point. But right now, we're in, I think, a very, very wide, a huge, huge chasm between the way that people look at the world, and it's depressing. It's really depressing. And I agree with your point.
What was so heartbreaking for me is just being in the place that I was. I had a lot of friends, who were Bitcoiners, a lot of friends who are libertarians, a lot who are hardcore anarchists. And to see so many of those people go from, let's fight against authority, to now I'm the authority and you have to listen to me, right? And it was it makes you realize how many of these people didn't mean it. They were just waiting for their turn. And there's this famous podcaster dude who I'm not a fan of, Tim Pool, and he a couple of months ago had this quote or something. He was talking, someone was criticizing Trump's policies, like, oh, he's being authoritarian. He's like, no, you don't understand. It's not the boot of oppression. I'm wearing the boot. It's my boot, And I was just like, oh my. And that just sums it up. That just like hit the nail on the head. With a lot of these people who are out here saying these things, but what they meant is that they didn't mean, it's like that the sort of that flag a lot of libertarian use. It's like, don't tread on me, right? Which is great, but a lot of them meant, don't tread on me until it's my turn to tread on you. And I really like the one that the people have altered, and it says, don't tread on anyone. And it's like, that's the one I like. Don't tread on anyone. Don't tread on me, but also don't tread on those people over there.
I think that that's really hard. And my question there, I had a feeling that you might touch on some of the Trump stuff. And as somebody who was working as the White House correspondent for Bitcoin Magazine, I obviously had a literal and metaphorical front row seat to all of this stuff. And a lot of the work that I personally had to do is, you just I did want to see positive regulation and legislation get passed. I think unfortunately we haven't seen a lot of that. It's deeply unfortunate. But I could also I was also, because I was so close to it, also deeply disappointed. Like, yeah, I thought that we were trying to, separate money from state and empower individuals, not necessarily kiss up to the president, but okay. Do I have to like everything about Trump? I don't. But like, if I have a small niche that I have to sort of deal with him and the administration with about Bitcoin and Bitcoin regulation, it was enough for me to say, like, okay, I can give this a shot and I can have those conversations. Until I think eventually I felt that it just wasn't going to work the way that I hoped it was, and I was happy to take a step back from that role. But what I noticed was that a lot of people just wanted to be close to power. And my question for you there is, I have this conversation a lot with friends in the space who are a lot like you, whose opinions I respect and who are quite decent to others. Is this just a human being problem? It's not like a Bitcoin space. Are human beings just hierarchical? They love to look up to the person who's doing, the person with the power, or the person who's accumulating the most Bitcoin, the Trumps, the Bukeles, the Michael Saylors of the world. Is this just built into our DNA as human beings? And if it is, did you think maybe that Bitcoiners had this magic ability to hopefully bypass that, or at least recognize it and work at it? Were you hoping to see that, and maybe, somewhat disappointed that that has not become the case?
Yes, all of that. No. So yeah, I think you're correct. I think a lot of people just wanted to be close to power or became very intoxicated with power when they felt that they had some. I think that humans do have some weaknesses along those lines. I have a friend that I stole this line from. Maybe he stole it from somewhere else, I don't know, but he says that humans are what you get when an ape and an angel have a baby and raise it poorly. And so I think that humans absolutely have a lot of, sort of regressive instincts, right? Where we absolutely, there is an instinct to, dominate others, and have the boot of oppression. I think those are survival instincts, So there absolutely are there, and we also have a lot of dramatically better instincts. I mean, I had sort of a strange upbringing. I was homeschooled, and the only thing I was allowed to watch on TV was Star Trek. So I had it, this impression of humanity that it would, we'd be a little bit better by now. But I think absolutely we have, you and I talk, I debate with people sometimes in this space, and there'll be like some examples. Well, humans do this, and humans, we have this instinct, and we have this, that instinct. And I can be, yes, but also we have these better instincts here, right? So we have both, and then we get to choose which one we lean into. Right. And which one we lean into determines where humans go from here. Right. So, yeah, we have some regressive instincts, and I think it would be good for, you know, humanity and being humane in general to not lean into those. Right. And absolutely, I do think that I had this idea that Bitcoiners were better than this. Right. Like I had kind of thought I'd found the group of people that were better than that, you know? And I was wrong.
Well, let's be fair. Let's say maybe mostly, or you were disappointed by a chunk of people, but you did also say that there are certain people in the space who do uphold these ideals, and I think that's important. But before I get to that point, the one thing I wanted to say too is that I know that a lot of us have found Bitcoin what we see as maybe a monetary or a financial cheat code, but at the same time, we're living in this fiat world that's filled with chaos, that's filled with never-ending conflict, that's filled with the ravages of what currency debasement does to people. It makes people feel like they're not enough, like they're not producing enough, they're not doing enough because they can't afford things. What did I do wrong? I thought I followed all the rules. I thought I was doing it right. And so I think on a certain level, we go back to our base instincts when we start feeling that way because desperation kicks in. We start feeling like, oh, well, then I have to step on someone else before they step on me because these are desperate times and they call for desperate measures. So on a certain level, I'm not asking for you to afford people grace who are acting this way, but do you see it from that perspective at all, that maybe it's just people feeling desperate right now, and so we're getting sort of the worst side of people in some regards?
Totally. So it's definitely fear is what tends to bring out those aggressive instincts, right? And so when that fear is present, that, you know, then you tend to get a lot more of that aggressive behavior. But it's also, it's, I think I have little sympathy for a lot of these sort of influencer crew because these are some of the most privileged people on planet Earth. Right. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, may we all be so lucky, right? There's nothing at all wrong to have been born in a good place and in a good time with resources. May we all be so lucky. But to then you can't, you know, these are people that are globetrotting, that probably have a couple of houses, you know what I mean? Like, these are not people who are experiencing fear that they're not going to have a meal tomorrow, right? And I have so much more sympathy for someone in Venezuela who does something, you know, ugly. Rather than that crew, you know what I mean? So, and it's also that politicians and anyone, corporations, marketeers, anyone who's trying to manipulate people, right? Fear is co-opting things is a really, really successful and popular one, and then fear, right? And these are so this is it's and people like to, oh, there's this thing that was popular like a year ago that like and empathy is weaponized. Like, oh God, no. Fear is weaponized. Fear is the most weaponized of all human emotions, you know? And so that's exactly what happens in these. If you can get people in a fear state, you can get them to do ugly, aggressive things in for this particular flag, you know, for this particular cause.
Agreed 100%. And I think that that fear state is where it's generally speaking. I read a really interesting book lately called Power Versus Force, where the author basically figured out the human consciousness scale from 0 to 1,000. And he says, so 200 is his dividing line. And to get above 200, you need integrity or courage to get to a place of acceptance, love, all these higher states of being. But he said that in his studies, he basically found that like 85 to 90% of humanity exists well below 200, which is in a state of fear, guilt, shame, and it produces all of what you would call, I think, a good word for it is, like you said, is sort of like these ugly situations that aren't great. And what's funny, to comment on your thing, your comment about someone in Venezuela, I lived in Venezuela under the Chavez regime in a barrio there, so in a poorer neighborhood there. And you don't see people doing a lot of those ugly things. You actually see them helping each other a lot more because there's a need for community. And so this, I think this community that a lot of us maybe came to Bitcoin for, where we'd hope to see people helping out where possible. Not everybody can do everything for everybody in this space. It's not necessarily there because the people who are sort of the influencers who are sort of selling this, the Bitcoin community, quote unquote, thing, aren't necessarily from a real community where they've ever had to behave in such a manner. So it's sort of like a nice talking point, but something that doesn't actually establish itself in reality, which is really disappointing, I think, to a lot of people who do value community and would like to see maybe more symbiosis or working together in this space. But speaking of that, as I said, I thought that there was something uplifting at the end of that text where you said there are people still in this space that you do resonate with, and that you do still uphold the ethos. So maybe a little bit about that. We don't have to shout out those specific people, but maybe some of the things that those people do. In what ways are those people upholding the Bitcoin ethos and sort of at least doing enough to make you not want to leave this space?
Yeah. Yes. Thanks to those people. But it's so going back, you're talking about community, and there's another thing, and then people sometimes people talk about Bitcoin being cold, and then, being from the States, but now I live in Puerto Rico, which is technically part of the States, but it's not. So you kind of get this different perspective on American culture and all this sort of things. One thing that I think is a very important variable here is that humans are incredibly social creatures. Like, it's just deeply wired into us. We can't escape it. In the States, we are taught that that is a failing and something to be embarrassed about, and we're supposed to have this rugged individualism. And if you mean someone, that's like a personal deep failing, right? And I think that really does a number on us and causes us lots of problems. And I think because we can't change what deeply social creatures we are, when we try to deny it, it pops up in weird, strange ways. And that's like the weird, some like cultish sort of vibes that happen sometimes in the Bitcoin world. I think that's how we see it here in this little pocket. But because we are such intensely social creatures, when all the people around you are doing a particular thing, there is a fear instinct, a survival instinct, where it's like you have to fall in line as a matter of survival. Right. And so we have such intense wiring in that way that someone really has to have like pretty solid convictions or really solid values, or be someone who is leading sort of the examined life, right? Where you're kind of aware of what's happening around you and what your values are. And I think that we don't spend enough time really examining our values. And so I think when you don't, then you get so easily pulled into these types of, social movements and big waves of changes. So I think that people that have been in this space and then didn't get caught up in any of the authoritarianism or the elitism or any of this, I think is like, I wind up having so much respect for that, because I think those people are probably like, just actually have values or convictions, or maybe they just got lucky and their particular circle isn't subjected to this stuff. Like, there's so many different things, but I think I'm just so many different ways in which that could have come about. But I just wind up being really, really impressed, because I think it's so
Yeah.
hard to not fall into just the wave,
A 100%. I think that is the case. I think it is also, it's probably a similar percentage where I would say that that seems to be, like, in my opinion, and I don't mean this in any sort of condescending or mean way, nor am I putting myself in, like, the upper echelon, but I think it is similar to that. Maybe 15, 20% of the people in this space really do come to this with unshakable principles. Like, I'm not budging on this. This is what I think Bitcoin is. This is why I came here. This is what I want to see accomplished. I think what also gets difficult, what gets hard about that, is that there's a lot of opportunities to give up on those principles to make more money, or to be a part of some sort of scheme or something in the Bitcoin space, and to maybe sort of cash out quickly and then walk away from all this, and then walk away with your Bitcoin or whatever other money you made, and sort of live a quieter life. And I think that the not allowing yourself to get sucked into that is really, really difficult. It takes a lot of integrity, and it's also sort of, it's like if you came here because on some level you understood Bitcoin as, let's just say, on some level, you understand it as a financial asset, which it is. It's more than that for sure, but it is a financial asset. Well, then obviously you're conscious of what money is and what purchasing power is and what, like, you know what it is. So, like, there's some element of you that was, let's, for lack of a better word, maybe let's say opportunistic. And I'm not using that with a negative connotation, but you saw an opportunity here. You wanted to be part of it and this. So it's, I think it's difficult because oftentimes it's like, you're really almost looking for a diamond in the rough, somebody who kind of gets all these things about money and opportunity and all this kind of stuff, but at the same time is like, has deep integrity, has morals, all this kind of stuff. It's like, is that, am I making this sort of creature up in my brain? And I'm not saying that anybody who understands money is inherently bad. It's not that point. It just happens to be that, like, if we look at the system, our current system, like, let's just say the political system, it's like, well, people on the right are more concerned about money. And as you talked about, the rugged individualism and all that kind of stuff, whereas people on the left are more concerned about, let's say, human rights and working and helping the poor, whatever it is. So it's weird because there's no real, in our traditional system, at least in the political system, there's no real space for the idea of a Bitcoiner because it does take from both of those worlds. It's somebody who believes in human rights, anti-authoritarianism, but also understands the value of money and what currency debasement and all these other things. And so it always leaves me in a place of like, who am I even trying to build with or appeal to? Like, because most people don't have this framework. Most people from my regular life are like, who I used to be more politically to the left, think I've completely lost my mind. And they're like, they've lessened their engagement with me. Whereas people in this space, when you bring up any sort of idea on the left, where, you know, amongst more people who are just sort of like, why would you talk about that? That's just woke nonsense. I just wrote an article about making space for female developers. And the developers, everyone that I interviewed said, we don't want to be judged by anything other than our merit by what we do. But at the same time, sometimes if you don't see other people who look like you, it can be a little bit intimidating to enter a space. So you're not saying judge them, you know, by a different standard because they're a female, just simply like, hey, it could be a little bit difficult when it was about predominantly about African women who want to become Bitcoin developers. They, you know, it's a lot of white bros in this space. Those women might feel a little bit intimidated by that. But the amount of backlash I got for that, for being woke, when I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. I thought we were creating global money. I thought we were creating a global network. Why would women from Africa be left out of that network? I don't understand that. But literally, this is not a thought that goes through most people's brains. And it has left me wondering, like, what am I doing here as someone who I think, as you said, maybe has lived a bit of an examined life. I tried to, at the very least. It's like, who are we actually appealing to? Luckily, the HRFs of the world, you know, and that sort of world has begun to exist. So I think that there's a little bit of like, okay, that's a dimension of Bitcoin. But I feel like that's not big enough. That's still very sort of in its own, that's its own sort of thing. And a lot of people just look at that as like the charity arm of Bitcoin or something like that. Not a real dimension to it, the human empowerment dimension. Sorry about my own little rant there. But I wonder if you go through the same thought process of that. Most people are coming to this space with other dynamics at play, political dynamics, whatever those dynamics might be, and there isn't necessarily a space for, whether you're a real anarchist or libertarian or democratic socialist, I'm sorry, or what is it, libertarian socialist, you know, some of these different ways of thought that I think there aren't huge pools of people that fully understand these ways of thought. And then there's even fewer who are really living with the sort of integrity that upholds that ethos. I don't know. I think for because I've noticed all of this, I sort of have, what's the word, lowered my expectations when it comes to what I hope people will act like in this space. But at the same time, I think it's also important to highlight the people who do have integrity, who do have morals, and who do voice that, which is, again, part of the reason I reached out to you, because I think you fall into that camp. So I guess I'll stop ranting there. But my question to you is, do you think that maybe over time that circle of people gets bigger, that maybe they see people like yourself or other people like you and say, hey, oh, I kind of feel that way. I kind of have a nuanced view on the world and politics and Hannah seems like someone I might gravitate towards. Do you think over time this circle expands?
I hope so. That's what, you know, gets me out of bed in the morning and keep trying, you know, is to, that hopefully that'll, you know, that circle will expand. One thing that's been sort of a favorite topic of mine, sort of a hobby, the past couple of years, and there's psychology. It's been a curiosity of mine. I think over the past like 5 years or so, I've really dug into that, and that's kind of, brought me about to realizing what incredibly social creatures humans are, whether we want to admit it or not. But there's also sort of this idea of like the collective unconscious, or sort of things that we just sort of accept as default that we don't really examine. And that has such a massive impact on us. And I think that's so true with politics. Like, I can see sort of these human, not even flaws, sometimes they're flaws, but just human instincts and how they get so manipulated by politics. And I think the only way out of that is to be like consciously aware of them. And this sort of tribalism and this fear-based tribalism stuff and this like wanting to belong to a community. Someone who's fairly libertarian, I have this constant source of frustration where I feel it's like the lefties want people to have personal freedom, but not economic freedom, right? And then the righties want people to have economic freedom, but oh, you can't marry that person, and you'd better get back in the kitchen and cook a meal, And so it's like they want, like, and it's like, why is it designed that way? Where's the political party that is just personal and economic freedom, right? And I think then we fall into somehow it got set up that way. And then there's this fear and division. And then we just, because we grew up with that and we're so used to it, it's just part of the collective unconscious and we don't question it, right? And so I think the answer sort of to that one is just kind of if we do talk about it, more, right? If we do, I think, come up with catchy phrases, because unfortunately that works so well on humans, but it's true. Then, it's like it's maybe you can change the collective unconscious, but it's not one particular issue, right? It's just this idea. I think it's so important to have this idea of an understanding of humanity, especially having read a ton of psychology, it shocks me how little I understood about the functioning of my own brain even 5 years ago, right? And I think we need to understand ourselves so much better so that we don't get caught up in these traps by people who, a lot of them, especially politicians, as someone who's not a big fan of politicians, I like to talk a lot of shit about them, but credit where credit's due, they are experts at social manipulation, right? And that's like where I think, I'm such a tech nerd and I spend so much time thinking about, technological solutions, but I'm starting to realize that a lot of our problems are just we don't understand ourselves well enough. And that's kind of something that we have to change to sort of get out of this trap of just being jerked around from left to right, or this party to that party, in this constant fear state, so we have to get out of that. Also, I think that it's so healthy for people to live in different cultures, right? To travel and live in different cultures and see different perspectives on things. I was very much brought up with the, sort of a very like evangelical Christian American exceptionalism type of stuff that is unfortunately also super duper hierarchical. And living in different cultures, and I don't want to be like America sucks and other places is great. No, there's a lot of really, really amazing things about, like, I'm very, very lucky to have been born where I was. But once you go somewhere else, even if it's not utopia, you can kind of get a different perspective on things, and just realizing how much of the American culture is more. We have to have more. I have to be above more people. I don't have value unless I'm above someone else. Like little phrases that just pop up from my childhood, like the cream rises to the top, like just the given that you have to be at the top or you're not good, and just like these weird little things that just pop up and be like, oh. And so I think we have to really be aware of our own cultural biases, even if we're very lucky to have been born in a very, very good place. Yeah.
Yeah, agreed 100%. I've bounced around a lot. I've lived on, I think, every continent aside from Australia. And it's not that I love New York. It's where I'm from. It's where I still am. But partially, one of the reasons I love it is because it's still a crossroads for the world. And I do love learning from people. Before doing this work, I was teaching immigrants English at the college level. I was teaching writing to non-native English speakers, and then working in New York City public schools. and you're constantly learning from people. So even when I wasn't living outside of countries, I constantly was learning. And it's not that everything I learned from, whether it's someone from the Dominican Republic or West Africa, was like, oh, that's better than what we do here. In a lot of cases, I was like, no, like, I like that we do things this way in America. And I also like that certain things happen this way in other countries. And I think one of the big dimensions of what I liked about other countries was this idea of community. Because as much as I do think it's important that people have space to go and make what they want to make of themselves, which is a good part of the American journey, I think the idea that you do it completely alone is a myth. That's not a real thing. Everybody works together with other people on some level. To not acknowledge that is kind of silly. But I think going back to maybe the libertarian school of thought, I think that that is sort of baked into that. I think that there is an idea of like this willful engagement with other people. It's just a compulsion that they don't necessarily like. And I get that. But then at the other side of things, if you're claiming to be a libertarian, but then you're sort of cheering on Trump, and I'm not even saying this as a slight towards Trump, he's just not a libertarian. But if you're cheering him on and sort of going along the lines, you know, of what you said earlier about like, okay, it's my time to wear the boot and to stomp on people, well then you're not really upholding this ethos. And I think that one of the things that I've thought a lot about, if you're not upholding the ethos when it gets hard to uphold the ethos, you're not really that thing. If you're doing it when it's easy to do, that's like everybody can do that. You have to do it when it gets hard to do, and that's much harder. But I think another thing here, there's a few different things that I wanted to pull on, but one of them very quickly is sort of with Bitcoin, there's no centralized entity, there's no thing, there's no human thing that people can sort of look up to and get rules from. You have a protocol. You have this decentralized protocol, and ideally, you sort of want people. Please hear me out as I say this. Like serving the protocol, meaning trying to build better technology that will ultimately benefit people. So it's not like worshiping at the altar of the protocol, but serving the protocol ideally so that it benefits more and more people around the globe. But do you think that concept is maybe a little bit too hard for people to grasp? Even when we look at religions, there's always a central human figure in a religion that's a quote-unquote like a representative of God. Do you just think maybe our minds can't grasp this idea of we're supposed to serve this thing that is not a human being or not a human entity or institution? Is that, I don't know, is that just, do you think perhaps too difficult or too abstract for I don't want to sound condescending, but for most people to wrap their heads around.
Yeah, it's we get really philosophical there. And I think sometimes when I'm talking to Christians, there's like this very, I would call it hierarchical, but there's definitely like this figure, like I am nothing compared to God. I must worship God, like this very hierarchical structure. And we are God's children. And sometimes ask them like, if we're God's children, do we not grow up, right? Like, at what point do we, you know, come out of that, you know, like that scenario? And I think that's just me being like very optimistic and working towards like a Star Trek future. But I think we just like have to evolve a bit, and sort of having that idol that we look up to is a bit of a childish perspective. Right. It's also easy. Right. So I just finished this book about people leaving fundamentalist religions. Right. And one thing that was so interesting to me about it was like that people tend to be drawn into cults or very intense religious stuff when there's something, you know, there's a problem in their life, when they're down and out. Right. You're born into it, or you wind up going into it when you're down and out. And, I don't have a problem with religion. I think that a lot of, you know, religious groups do a lot to help people when they're struggling. But there is this aspect of it that it's simpler, right? So being really conscious of yourself and your values and what you're doing and how you're making choices exhausting, right? and if you just have, here are these sets of rules. If you're going to be a good person, you're going to follow these 10 things, done. Now, when you're in crisis mode, that can be really helpful. But at some point, like, you have to kind of come out of that, right? It's like you have to do the difficult work of living a conscious life, right? And I think that's kind of just a human evolution thing where we just like, you can't, if we don't learn to do that, then we'll just get yanked around from one flavor to the next, and it'll be tough. And then There's another thing I often think about in this space too, that is, especially like I often suffer the same situation you do, where I have friends that are righties and friends that are lefties, and at various times they accuse me of being the other one, and I'm like, and at the moment I get accused of being a lefty a lot more, I think, simply because we have a righty president that I'm critical of, but a lot of the ugliness that I see in this space is people that are just trying to dunk on the libtards, and what's I think a good way to frame that is, and it's not that there aren't things to dunk on, like there so are, but it's just that there's a difference in, like, you can kind of feel that vibe, the difference, between dunking on something and moving towards something, right? So am I trying to trample something and being mad about it, or am I moving towards something that's good? Right. And thinking about what might have happened with a lot of the Bitcoiners is that we're moving towards this ideal that we had, right? And then some people got caught in this fear state where the lefties are trying to squash it, so we have to squash the lefties, right? And then you wind up in sort of this space where you're squashing rather than moving towards something. And I think that's like a big trap that a lot of people fell in there.
100%. And that was probably the best way I've heard that dynamic put. I've thought a lot about that. And I think it's also just, it's that base human emotion of like almost like defense and fear of just saying, like, no, I just, as long as we keep these people back. And then what ends up happening is like you end up just constantly engaged in a fight and never actually building anything. And I do want to get to building things because I know that's part of the work that you do. But I want to highlight one thing you also tweeted, and I really loved this. This was part of a tweet that you sent out. I think it was a few weeks ago. Your personal freedom depends on your ability to consciously manage your self-concept, and that if you're not consciously questioning and managing your self-concept, then surely you will get pulled around by those trying to manage it for you. You can comment on it if you want, but I thought it was a nice summary of what you were just saying there. You know, just this idea that we think in terms of the left and the right, or if we just vote the right person in, if we just do this, and again, we just continue to get yanked back and forth in these places. But I think maybe as a final thought here, let's bring it back to Bitcoin for a second. Maybe in a world, let's say Bitcoin fully succeeds the way that we want it to, and for that reason, on some level, the average human being gets their time and energy back. Does them getting their time and energy back potentially lead to that them having more time to reflect on their self-concept? Meaning, right now, a lot of people are stuck in the rat race, barely getting by, struggling in the fiat world, all this stuff, and it's difficult. So it's difficult to sit and reflect. A lot of it is just a reaction to what we see around us, and whether it's a politician, whether that's Trump or Mamdani saying, "I'm gonna do this. I'll fix it for you." When you're in a desperate state, I can sympathize with that. I can even empathize with it on a certain level. Do you think that maybe in a world where, let's just say, the money gets fixed, quote unquote, I'm using that term loosely because I don't fully believe in just this utopia is born when Bitcoin is fully adopted, but I do think that people get some of their life force back. Will that potentially lead to people being having an ability or and time and energy to reflect more?
100%, right? And I'm actually in the middle of reading another book on psychology because I'm obsessed. But there was this
I
one
love
chapter
it.
where this guy was talking specifically about drug addiction and trauma and early childhood experiences and all these sorts of things, where how if you have traumatic experiences or grow up in a difficult situation, whether that's you don't have enough food or you're being abused by someone or whatever it is, like it actually. The wiring of your brain winds up being a bit different in a way that has you essentially. God, I was actually having a debate with one of my kids this morning on exactly this topic about like how much free will do we actually have? Like how much programming do we have versus how much free will do we have? Right. And clearly I'm an optimist. I think we have quite a lot of free will, but no doubt there's programming, especially from early childhood, that really gets shoved into our brains, right? And so there's some combination of 80% free will, 20% programming, or however you want to call it, right? But it's the more, there's some studies showing that the more difficult experiences you have in life, the more like the circuitry that really supports free will gets diminished, right? And so I think it's entirely true that, if you're in a better state, if we're not, hungry and worried about where our food's coming from, if we're not scared of being invaded and murdered by an army, you know, that we absolutely are not. Not only do we have more time, like our actual brains, the brains of our children will get wired differently in a way where they're able to do more reflection and to do, like, you can't have free will if you don't have like that metacognition, right? Like, I'm going to have to, what am I doing right now and why? Right. So we have to get out of survival states in order to have an examined life, right? And I think we're at the stage, interesting state in humanity, where it's like only, you know, pockets of us in certain places are now past survival state, right? Like, I think probably you and I did not grow up in intense, I mean, I'm sure we all have our issues, right? Have things that have happened, but like, we didn't grow up in intense survival state, right? So we're more set up, more wired to be able to have an examined life, to consciously choose our self-concept rather than just fall into a fear-based self-concept.
I think that this is the case, yes. And I do agree with you. I think my biggest hope with Bitcoin is that it simply affords more people the ability to get out of survival mode and to reflect, and not just for the sake of society, but just on for each individual's sake. That it's such a privilege to be able to reflect, to sit back and say, like you just said, metacognition, to think about why you're thinking a certain way. It's really, really essential. And I think that if we are going to move into a world that hopefully, ideally, is bettered by Bitcoin, that's going to be a necessary step in that process. It's not just going to be that Bitcoin succeeds on a technological level or it replaces fiat. It's that it affords people the time and space to grow as human beings. I do feel like we get there. I all the days that I want to give up, I think about all of the people that I've either had on this show that I've spoken with around the world. And I think for those listening, one of the reasons that I focus specifically on Africa, Latin America, Southeast Asia, these are regions that traditionally have been disenfranchised by colonial powers, by the traditional systems that have shut them out. So this isn't even saying, this is on like a macro level, people who have been disenfranchised. And then when you see some enfranchisement through Bitcoin, you watch people start to say, oh, okay. And then this beautiful side of who they are comes out, whether it's who they are, their personality, or maybe there was this this someone with great technological abilities. But again, before the age of the internet and before a world in which they could start saving in Bitcoin and to get a little bit of breathing room, they couldn't express this part of who they were. So ideally, that's why the podcast is called what it is. We do see a new renaissance, but that is going to come with human work. It's not just Bitcoin fixes this and that's it. It's Bitcoin gives us an ability to fix ourselves a little bit. I don't know if that's maybe too frou-frou or like too sort of hoity-toity or whatever, but I think that ideally that's the work. And what's hard is that the incentives, especially on social media, is not to talk about any of this stuff with nuance or that there's any sort of like personal responsibility. It is to dunk on people. It is to shut other people down. It is to put the boot on other people's neck. But I also think that deep down, I think I might be wrong, that we've seen this with Bitcoin cycles. You've been in this longer than I have, but some of those types kind of come and go. The more sort of abrasive types, I've seen a bunch of them get washed out. Because I think deep down, it's actually exhausting to be that way. I don't think people feel good about themselves when they're that way. And I don't think they like to stay in the spotlight being that way. Because even if it's just like a role that you're playing, you eventually internalize some of that. And I don't think the average person wants to internalize that kind of stuff. So at first, you sort of do it because it gets you points on social media. Then maybe you meet people in real life and they really think you're that way. And you don't really want to be that way. I don't know. Maybe I'm giving certain people too much credit. But I do think that good people stick around. And I do think that there are a number of good people in the space. You know, there's the Jeff Booths of the world who are very popular in this space, who I think are also extremely decent human beings. And there's many other people as well. I'm just giving Jeff as maybe like a, you know, an example of someone who's very, very popular in the space, but is very soft-spoken, has obviously done a lot of self-reflection. So I think that that's there, and I think we have the ability to foster a scenario where more people feel comfortable being that way, ideally. And I apologize about all the ranting. Usually I like to have the guests talk a lot, but what you're saying strikes a chord with me, and I'm very much glad that we did this for that reason. Let's finish this up on a positive note, though. What does have you excited right now when you look at the Bitcoin space? What is inspiring you? You seem to be, I see you posting a lot about, I think it's L402, the agentic payments. So yeah, anything that you're working on, or just generally speaking, what sort of what's keeping you motivated for the time being?
Yeah, I'll tell you about that. You covered so many things, which makes me think of so many other things, but I will get to one that's, I think, so what great
Please.
about Bitcoin is I'm also an econ nerd. I have a degree in economics, and I read this great book maybe a year or so ago called Why Nations Fail, right? And it's all about, like, just dense economics, but love, love, love the book. And it's basically the TLDR is extractive economies versus inclusive economies, right? And one of the things I absolutely love about Bitcoin is it creates a situation where you have a more, it's not perfect, it doesn't fix everything, sorry, but it does create a situation where you're much more likely to have the inclusive economies, right? So it empowers people, right? And so that gives me such hope. And I'm very, very, very focused on use cases that are, utility, right? Like, I don't have a Lambo. I have no interest in having a Lambo. They're very claustrophobic. Have you ever been in one? Like, I don't like it. I hate
I've
buildings.
yet to be in a Lambo. I have to maybe orchestrate some sort of scenario where I could try that out just to get a better understanding of what you're
And then
talking
someone
about.
will get a picture and you'll get in trouble.
Yeah, that's it. That's
So.
right. That's right.
But they're very claustrophobic. They're just like tiny. Like, I don't know. I've no. It, this is not why I get out of bed in the morning. It's I'm really fascinated by the utility of this and real utility for real people. And I think in a lot of ways, like I also really like to think about people in developing areas, right? Because that's really where I think this stuff is going to be most impactful and most interesting, and provides the most utility, especially at the moment. So I get very excited about the sort of e-commerce type use cases for this, right? Or just any kind of commerce, right? So love Lightning. I think putting various different stuff on Taproot Assets is going to be super useful just to get like that stable unit of account mixed with this amazing, medium of exchange network. L402s, I think, are just so wildly cool to me, and I love them. And there's other protocols out there like X402, which I think just takes everything cool about, removes everything that was cool about L402. And then, it's just like, because it's like that bearer token, you don't have to have the same identity stuff, right? So you kind of get away from it's like creating that infrastructure that doesn't allow for the surveillance state in the same way. Again, when you have the surveillance state, you have this concentration of power. So you have this extractive rather than inclusive economy. So all of these things in Bitcoin, like Lightning, the Lightning Network, and L402s, and all this different stuff, really in so many ways serve to empower people, right? And give people so much better options. And for me, it was I fell in love with Bitcoin. I fell in love with alternative money when I was studying economics in university, and I realized like seigniorage gain, right? Like I realized like the incredible sort of concentration of power that controlling money is. And I was just like, it blew my mind. I'm like, I cannot believe the power structure that this is. Like, wait, this is not right, And then I got into like alternative currencies, and then and that's that led me to Bitcoin. But just like Bitcoin is such an incredible tool for empowering people, which then makes us able to have free time to be better human beings, right? And so that's hopefully a vicious cycle rather than an ugly cycle,
Yeah.
or a virtuous
A
cycle
virtuous
rather
cycle,
than a
right? Yeah.
vicious cycle.
Yeah. No, less vicious cycles. We're looking for less vicious cycles for sure.
Yes.
A last thing about that. So this is something that I advocated for in my previous role, and I think is really important, and that's the de minimis exemption for spending Bitcoin. Now I know that there are some hardcore Bitcoiners listening who will just say, dude, stop worrying about it. Just spend it if you want to spend it. That's fine. I just don't think the average person is going to think that way. But two, if there is a de minimis exemption for it, it also further legitimizes Bitcoin. It's the government saying this is something, this is money, this is something that you can spend. And I think that we're really nearing a time where that's necessary, especially as Block rolls out what they're rolling out, and especially as these layers get better and better. You're working on Lightning. I work on a layer above that, the Fediment layer with Fedi. And so there's
Love that.
and so there's there we're the technology is basically there. It's still Is it as easy to use as Venmo or PayPal? Not necessarily, but we're getting there, and I don't think we're far from it being that easy to use. So I think we're there, but is at this point, do you feel like regulation, you know, the powers that be do not want to see this get used as money? Not all of them. I don't like talking about the government as a monolith, but I've spoken with higher ups, and you know, they higher ups in the administration, and they're very much like, no, it's just a digital capital or whatever you want it. It's a savings account or whatever, because they don't want to see a competitor to the dollar. So, are we at a point where regulation is going to play a key factor at this point, so that some of the tools and the work that you're doing, people can use them more readily because they're not nervous about a capital gains tax or anything else that might sort of, I don't know, anything else that might impede them when it comes to, in a financial sense, that might impede them from using it?
Yeah. Well, it's a couple of different things. I think politicians, although they are not all the same, there's a lot of nuance and variation of what's going on there. Politicians often are absolute experts at co-opting things, right? And so if you co-opt Bitcoin and say, no, it's not money, it's just an investment, right? And that's a way to prevent it from being money, because you want to keep, you know, that the power that comes from printing the world's reserve currency and having that lever to pull, right? So I worry about that. I think you're entirely correct that, you know, what's happening with, you know, different e-commerce news stories that we've seen lately and all this stuff, we might get that de minimis exemption. That's absolutely huge for the e-commerce use case, but that's very focused on the states. And in a lot of ways, I think because there's such this political, massive political structure, I don't know if the states is the right place to focus right now. We also don't have a ton of need for use as Bitcoin as, you know, an e-commerce tool in the states. There's not that need for it. So I think it might be what's so amazing about Bitcoin and how it gets so many things right is it gets the logistics, it gets the game theory right in so many ways, is it's a global thing, right? So I think it might be better at this point in time to focus on having this really take off as currency in other places. And then once that really gets going, then, you know, politicians are not going to, in general speaking, I'm a little jaded sometimes, but, you know, generally speaking, they're not out there to do the right thing and to help people. They're out there to accumulate power. Not all of them, but a lot. And so they're not going to be like, we're going to do this because this is the right thing. They're going to do it once it becomes so popular that they have to do it. You know, and it's like laws. I don't think politicians are the leaders. I think they're the followers. And once the culture changes, once the logistics change, then they jump on board so as to not look like they're falling behind. So I think that's where energy is best spent, is probably in areas outside of the states. But then even in the states, it's like, do the thing. And then if you can make the thing popular, the politicians will have to follow. Right.
I think that's a really good way to put it. And I think intuitively, from being on the ground in a bunch of different countries in what gets termed the global south or the global majority countries, you just see people using it and you're seeing politicians. I follow a lot of what happens, especially in Kenya. Politicians are at least having to react to what's going on. But I think the other side to what's happening there, I think often about an example. So there's a large informal settlement in Africa called Kibera. It's about 600,000 people living in what gets termed a slum. And there's a Bitcoin circular economy that has formed there, and it has been a massive catalyst for the people, like a massive, massive catalyst. I wrote a piece. I visited it myself and wrote a piece on it. And what's actually interesting is I think on a certain level, both politicians and the mainstream media have seen the positive impact and been like, yeah, we can't really ignore this. This is a very real thing here. But then there's the trickiness of like, okay, well, what does regulation look like? Because, well, what if we come out and say we're pro Bitcoin, will then a certain amount of aid not flow into the country? Will there be other repercussions? So it's interesting to see right now, because I think inherently it's moving into this regulatory legal sphere. So it's going to have to be addressed, but I still think that there's going to be a bit of a conflict still in that, okay, if we adopt Bitcoin, and when I say aid, and I'm not just saying from the United States, but maybe China doesn't want to help because they want to see us adopting the Chinese yuan versus Bitcoin. So I think that even in some of these places where Bitcoin usage has existed in this legal gray area that people are just sort of using it as money because there are no regulations around it. Even with that, it's starting to come into focus, and I think that there's going to have to be some sort of reckoning with it. At the same time, I really don't know whether that'll be. I think it'll look different around the world. I'm just finishing a piece on Bolivia right now. Bolivia was one of like the eight countries in the world that fully banned Bitcoin. I mean, banned it. You could not touch it, no regulated exchanges, nothing. And then they were basically like, inflation is terrible. We have to make, quote unquote, crypto legal. And I think they saw a surge in like, 530% of, an increased rate in the use of Bitcoin and crypto within Bolivia. And so there's good stuff like that happening where they're just like, hey, we're not going to fight this anymore. And then I think we're probably going to see some pushback even from places in the world that have been relatively friendly to it. But generally, to your point, I think it is really important that we don't think about this as a US-centric thing. That was the thing that actually bothered me most about doing my job is I just thought that the Bitcoin story outside of the US is so much more, outside of the West, let's say, is so much more interesting than the Bitcoin story in the West. So generally speaking, for me, it's just more exciting to look at what's happening elsewhere because you get a real sense of people feeling empowered, and then those people also then wanting to express themselves, and they get jobs within this space and they start contributing, and then it's not only the fact that they're earning in a better money, but they have a job that's maybe paying them better than whatever they might have been doing on the ground in this place. And as that sort of spiral, upward spiral, continues, I just think it's one of the most beautiful things in the world in my seat to have the privilege to document and to be able to speak with people. So I fully agree with you. I think that if you really want to understand Bitcoin, get out of your comfort zone, maybe even go to a circular economy somewhere else in the world, see it, go there, stand on your own 2 feet, talk with people. And then also, you'll also get an idea of realizing that Bitcoin doesn't fix everything. It's not a magical tool in these places that has alleviated poverty overnight and made everything better. So I think you'll get the nuance that comes with it. But the foundation of it, I think, is that there's really a sense of hope in a lot of these places. And that hope exists partially because of the work that you're doing with Lightning and the people who you work with. So when I see you post negative things and they're always sort of, there's always a bit of a silver lining or sort of a positive message toward the end of these things, it's always like a sigh of relief. As a non-technical person, I'm always like, we can't lose the Hannah Rosenbergs of this world. Like she cannot burn out and get upset with all of the rest of us who are not doing a good job. So I thank you for the work that you do. I thank you for being, I think it was Kala who works on Cashew and BitChat, who said something, it's not enough just to write code. You have to be a decent person as well. And I think that you're an example of that. I think that you
Thank
are,
you.
yeah.
I saw that and I retweeted that. That was you.
Nice. I think it's important that we do both and that we're really good models for others in both ways. For me, I can only work on the latter part because my code writing skills aren't great. Maybe Claude will change that, but I sincerely appreciate you taking the time to do this. I think that your perspective is really invaluable, and yeah, I hope we hear from you more. And you're always welcome if you ever have any news or anything you want to share with us or want to come back on. You're always welcome to join us here.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a very fun conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, the pleasure is all mine. Any final thoughts, or where can people find you or follow the work that you're doing?
Any final thoughts I would say is that I am still very optimistic about Bitcoin and what Bitcoin will do for people. And I keep waking up every day and focusing on this. I think that we should criticize things, right? Even especially the things that are really important. Like we should be, calling out crappiness and dangers and worries when we see them. But I am still very enthusiastic and very excited about what Bitcoin can do for us. So.
Love that. Appreciate that. And then I don't know, should they follow you on X? Are you on Nostr? What's the best place to follow your work or to follow you on socials?
I am on all of the things. Twitter X is where I post mostly about Bitcoin stuff, LinkedIn sporadically. Nostr is a lot of my shower thoughts. If you want to hear my daily shower thoughts, it's
Let's
Nostr.
go. Nice. I like that. Yeah, Nostr, I feel like there is a little bit of a lowering of inhibitions. It's like, ah, I'm just going to share this thought over here that maybe I wouldn't have shared on X. Nostr is interesting, and Yeah, it's
And
like
Oster doesn't have the same sort of attack mob. And then I think it's just because
totally.
it's less used and there's less people there. So it's kind of like, well, whatever I post is cryptographically signed. So I can't claim I was like hacked and it wasn't me. But also, no one's watching. So whatever.
This is a perfect way to describe Noster. Maybe we'll cut this up for Noster, for the nostriches out there. Hannah, thank you so much again for taking the time to do this. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
Awesome. Bye, Sam.
Take it easy, everybody.